This is Sean with Voices LaVon and Voices of Racing. I'm here with Toddy Ruttman. Your father was the winner of the Indianapolis 500 in 1952 and had an unbelievable career in racing, and a lot of race legends redeem him as one of the best. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. So he was born March 11th in 1930. Is that right?
Correct.
And he was born in Moreland, Oklahoma?
That's correct.
Okay. So I think it's pretty great. The very first getting hooked on racing moment was with a family-built car. How would you describe that car?
I've only seen pictures of it. It was an old black roadster, and it was a family car, and Grandpa said he took the back seat out of it that him and Dad had driven to the Ashcan Derby in, now is known as the Orange Show, San Bernardino, California. And the next thing Gramps hears is we have a new entry, is Troy Ruttman, and Dad had entered the family car, and he was only 15 years old, didn't even have a driver's license, and he won his first race. And Dad said to me in 1945, and 30 laps later, I went to the pit gate and got $25 cash, so I went home and I quit my two jobs because I could make more money racing, and started racing five nights a week, quit school.
Did he use that car at the beginning?
Yes.
Or was it other cars? It was that car.
Yes, that car. I think they called it the Ruttman Special. After that, Dad wrote on the side of it, I've seen pictures, the Ruttman Special.
Do you have any idea how he modified it or the horsepower or anything about it?
I don't. And I don't know anybody who would either that's still alive. I never asked Dad that.
So what was the track, again, the name that he was racing on?
They called it in those days the Ashcan Derby, and it was spelled A-S-H-K-A-N, Derby. And it is now known as the Orange Show in San Bernardino, California, which Dad used to always refer to as San Berdu. It still exists. That same racetrack still exists today.
All right, so kind of just walk us through chronologically. That was the first. What were the second things, the third things? Like, what kind of led up, you know, what are the things you know that kind of led up all the way to the 500? What was the road to Indy?
Well, hopefully Mom can fill in all of this a lot better than me because this is before my day. But the things that I know, he was the oldest of four boys. He knew that if he raced, he could support himself, and he didn't like having welfare, WPA stamps, as he called it in those days, WPA overalls. That was an embarrassment for him. So this was his ticket out of the poorhouse. Dad's words, this was my ticket out of the poorhouse. I'm going to drive five nights a week. I'm going to support my family. And he quit school, and he started doing this for that purpose and that reason. And I know after the Roadsters, he started driving midgets back in those days in the Southern California era. That was the war time. That's what Mother says. Midgets were very popular. They would pack 30,000 people in a stadium in California just to watch midgets. And he drove against the likes of Billy Vukovich and Sam Hanks and Manuel Ayulo. These all names that I've heard my dad talk about and Mom talk about. And then after the midgets, I know he started driving sprint cars. He got hooked with a guy in a sprint car and called it the Deuce. And it was, Mom said, unbeatable in 1951. Dad drove the sprint car that Emmett Malloy owned, the Deuce, and won 16 out of 19 races in 1951, which that would have made my dad 21 years old then. And then after the Deuce, he always wanted to drive for Aggie. So as soon as he became age, which he was 21, now he knew he could go to Aggie and Aggie would give him a ride. So he started driving for Aggie at the age of 21. But if I go back a couple years, Mother said there was a guy at the Speedway in 49, which was my dad's first year of driving the Speedway. His name was Ray Carter. I think it was Ray Carter. If it wasn't Ray Carter, it was Ray Crawford. I think Ray Carter. And he kind of turned a blind eye to Dad's age. He didn't care if he was 19 or not, because my grandma had made it to where Dad had a birth certificate that said he was born in 1927. So the birth certificate nobody questioned back in those days. So Ray Crawford was his first year at Indy in 1949. He was 19. And then the next year, again, this is all before my day. I'm trying to think. I think he drove the... He didn't drive for Aggie in 51. He drove for somebody else. And then in 52, that's when he drove for Aggie. He was 22 years old and started doing Indy cars from the sprints. And I know he drove a total of 12 Indy 500s, and he only won the one in 1952. He did tell me in 61 he could have won that one also, but he had mechanical problems. But he said he went by Foyt like he was tied to a fence post, and that's the year that Foyt won his first 500, was 61. Matter of fact, I just ran into Foyt here in May of this year and had breakfast with him at Charlie Brown's, and I had this conversation with him and a big smile on his face when I told him my father said he went by you, Foyt, like you were tied to a fence post. He said that's the only other time I know I could have won Indy, but mechanical problems, and I again can't tell you what kind of mechanical problems happened in 61. So he also drove stock cars during that era in the 60s, I do know. In the 50s, Rush Chevrolet comes to my mind. A lot of pictures that I've looked at with Dad, I can tell you I know who these guys were, but I never saw Dad race. One of the things that my parents did, they wouldn't let us go to the racetrack like some other kids maybe got to do, because my mom said they would kill guys weekly, and she didn't want us children being there if something happened and some guy was killed, especially Dad. So I don't recall ever being at Indy and seeing my dad race until 1963 and 64. That's it. It's the only time I ever got to see my dad race. So when guys are in their 75, 80, 85 era today, tell me how good my dad was, they can tell me, but I have no recollection of any of that because I either wasn't born or I was too little to remember, or if I was old enough to go at 12 years of age, let's say, I couldn't go because they thought, you know, somebody was going to die, so they didn't want us at the racetrack.
Who are some of the guys that over the years have talked about your dad and you've enjoyed convos with that have been kind of pinnacle at the top of racing?
Well, the first two that come to my mind, one of them is Rufus Parnell Jones, and my dad called him Roof for short. If you were to talk to him and read his book or know him personally, he would tell you that Troy Ruttman was his hero. And a couple years ago, I went to Roof's place of business in Torrance, California, and sit down and talk to him for an hour. And he just said, your dad could do things with a race car that nobody else could do. It didn't matter if it was a midget, a roadster, a sprint car. He said even a baby buggy. He could drive it, he could win with it, and he was his hero. That's what Rufus Parnell Jones has told me. And Gurn, my dad's nickname for Daniel Sexton Gurney, was Gurn, and I sat down for 3 hours a few years before he passed away, and he told me that my dad was his hero and how good he was and how much he taught him and how good he was to him, because when him and Dad went to Europe in 57, 58, Gurn wasn't very well known, was just getting started in racing, even though they were only a year apart in age. My dad did everything early, and Gurn did not do things early. So my dad kind of put Gurn under his wing and took him places. And my mom was with them in Europe, and they went to Monza, Italy. They went to Nürburgring. They went to Reims, France. And they did all this together, my mom, Daniel Sexton Gurney, and my dad. And they were both big guys. And somebody over there, I think his name was Bernard Caillet, gave my dad a Renault to drive, 57 and 58. And my dad and Gern are both 6'4". They're big guys. So if you know anything about a Renault, they're small. Well, my dad and Gurney were driving in the front. Gern was behind the wheel. Mother was in the back with all the suitcases. And they were looking for, I got to tell this story. They were looking for a hotel, and they passed it. So Gern driving, he puts on the e-brake, makes an abrupt left. This is Gern telling me the story. And he said, I rolled it onto the side. And your mom was in the back seat with all the luggage on her. And me and your dad were just laughing our butts off because we think it's funny, and she didn't think it was funny. But that's in Gern's book. I think Gern's book is coming out this year. If you get a chance to read his book, that will be in his book. And then he would tell me stories about how Dad taught him how to get around Monza in that same Renault, taught him how to drive it. My dad was good at teaching people. Back to Gern, Parnelli from Gern. He told me that my dad came to him when he knew he was driving for Aggie, and he says, don't do what I did, Roof. If he tells you to invest in money, you invest. He said, I had a chance to go in with Fletcher Jones, Chevrolet, and Mercedes-Benz and all that out in Newport Beach, and he said, I passed on it. He said, you need to listen to what he said. I was too young. I was only 22, and I was very foolish. And he said, the other thing I want to tell you, I've probably drank more beer than you'll ever drink, Roof. Don't do what I do. Don't drink. It ruined my racing career. Because when my dad was in a horrible crash in 52, right after the 500 in Iowa, it was a thing where the car rolled and tore up his arm, and it laid him up for 18 months. And that's when my dad started drinking and got heavy, and he was never the same after that. Where before that, Mom and Gern and Rufus Parnell Jones would tell you Troy was unbeatable. Another man that comes to mind that told me on the telephone one day, and again, they were the same age and drove against each other, was Jim Rathman, who also exchanged names with his brother. He was really Dick Rathman, not Jim Rathman, but his brother was older, so he took his brother's birth certificate, and they switched. So all of his life, including when he won the Speedway and got through his marriages, he had two, he was always known as Jim Rathman. He called me on the phone, and his exact words were, you know, Toddy, your dad was my hero. Well, when I got done with the tears running down my cheeks, I said, how could that be? You guys are the same age. You drove together. And he said, doesn't matter. Your dad could drive anything, and he could win in it. Your dad was my hero. Another man, Roger Ward, he comes to mind, walked up to me at a Stock Car Hall of Fame, and he said, your dad was a natural. He could do anything and be good in it. And he said, I was sure glad that when I was driving race cars for Leader Card for the Wilkie family, that your dad didn't have the same equipment as me. And what that told me by him saying that was, if my dad would have had the same of equipment, he may not have won his races. And I think he won in 59 and 62, I think. Those are the 2 years Roger Ward won. So,
what was your dad asked to race in Formula One?
Yeah, he went to Europe with my mom and Gern in 57, 58 and raced. 1 year he raced for Aggie in the 98 car that I just saw up at the Milwaukee Mile. The guys restored it. And the next year he drove for Jack Zink in a Roadster. And actually, the Race of Two Worlds was known as, there was three races. So you could win one race, two races, or three. 1 year, Jim Rathman won all three. And the other year, Jimmy Bryan won two of them, and my dad won one. I cannot tell you whether it was 57 or 58.
These were Formula One races?
Yes. Yes. And they were racing against the Europeans. And the Indy guys went over there and just cleaned their clocks. This is what This is what they did in those roadsters. They just humiliated them. So they didn't win in their Ferraris or whatever else they were at. Here's a story for you. Clay Brookings Smith. He was my dad's mechanic the year he won. Well, he was also the passenger or co-driver, or whatever they call it back in those days in the 50s. And they took a Mercury down to Mexico in the Mexican road race. I think it was 54, if I recall. And in that particular race, Clay Brookings Smith and my dad driving just ran off and hid in the hills from the Ferraris and all those cars. But as soon as they got on the straightaway, see, the Ferraris could catch my dad, but they couldn't in the hills. So my mom tells the story that dad got fourth in the Mexican road race. But if dad would have had a Ferrari, he would have been winning. He wouldn't have gotten fourth because, see, he was just an old Mercury of some sort. Again, before my day, so I'm having to paraphrase when all this took place. But that's the story I was told regarding that Mexican road race. And then if I was to fast forward to the 52 when my dad won the 500, he was in the last upright dirt car to win the Indy 500. And today that car sits in the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum and is owned by the museum people. And that was up against, his car was up against the Penske of his day. In other words, the rich kids, they called them, this is what my mother calls them too, and Howard Keck were very wealthy people. And they had the best roadster, the best money, the best ride, and Vukovich was the driver. So my dad called Clay Brookings Smith a genius of a mechanic. So they didn't just quit and say, oh, we're up against the big boys and we got to run second. No, we're going to win this race on fuel mixture. So my dad tells me this story. He said, Clay decided we're going to go slower during the race with this fuel mixture, but we'll have one pit stop. That's how we're going to beat Vuki, because they knew that Vuki was really the only one that they had to beat. Well, the first pit stop my dad had, the car caught on fire. So when it caught on fire, Gramps was on the pit crew. Well, this is his kid. He wanted to pull the shoulder harnesses and get his kid out of the seat. Well, dad says, no, Pops, put out the fire. I got to go win this race. So my dad had an excess of a 2-minute pit stop, and he went on to have to do a second pit stop. So that, what do I call it, fuel mixture thing, that kind of got thrown out the window, because even though dad went slower in the beginning of the race, that first pit stop, they had to go to plan B, and they were going to have to do another pit stop. So what happened to Vuki on his second pit stop, dad said, was Vuki's guys put the lug nut on his rear wheel on backwards. So now Vuki had an excess of a 2-minute pit stop. So now my dad's words were, now it kind of put us even, Stephen, Todd. Now all I had to do was just reel him in. And my dad's 22 years old. He's a poor Oaky kid. Just like that's why he started racing, because he didn't want to be poor. It was embarrassing for him. Well, now he knew if he won the Indy 500 as a 22-year-old kid, that would change his life forever. So he never backed off the throttle. He never jumped out of the seat when it was on fire. He never gave up. He persevered. With 20 laps to go, my dad said you could see the right front threads on the tire, because halfway through the race, dad said on that dirt car that he was driving, on the bricks, the right front tire weight came out. So halfway through the race, it was like he was off-roading it. Just, he really probably needed a kidney belt when it was all done. But that's why the right front was doing that, was because dad had that come out halfway through the race, and it was wearing the tire uneven. So with the thread showing, he's still catching Vuki. My mom told me this, a second to a second and a half every lap, the last 20 laps of the race. My dad never backed off the throttle, even seeing the right front ready to blow with thread showing. And then with 9 laps to go, going into turn 3, Vukovic crashes and hits the wall. My dad, being the person that he is, he had a big heart. He was actually 2.5 laps around that, really more concerned about Vuki being alive or not hurt than anything. So when Dad came back around and he saw Vuki was out of the car, standing up on the wall, my dad backed off the throttle with 8 laps to go, knowing he had threads showing, and just cruised because he knew he had 3 laps on Jim Rathman, who was 3 laps behind, who finished second. And that's when he won the race, and that changed his life forever. Although Dad said he was too young, didn't appreciate it. He got too much money, too much fame, started drinking, doing a lot of things that a young 22-year-old kid can't handle. Maybe if he was 33, he said he would have handled it differently. But he was just 22 and too famous, too rich, too quick, and a lot of ways it was. And it's a record that still holds. Dad became the youngest winner. May 29th, it'll be 2022, it'll be 70 years since Dad won Indy, and nobody's broke that record in 70 years.
That's very impressive. So what are some of the major awards or Hall of Fames or other major races that he won over the years?
I know for a fact he won the race right after Indy was Raleigh, North Carolina. That racetrack doesn't exist anymore. He won tons of midget races and sprint car races, and everything from on the West Coast to the East Coast. I know Tommy Hinterschitz was notably on the East Coast, and he was asked one time who was his best competition, and he said Troy Ruttman. Troy Ruttman was asked by me, Toddy Ruttman, Dad, who was your best competition in the sprint cars? And he said, no two ways about it, it was Tommy Hinterschitz. So when those guys competed in Pennsylvania and out here on the East Coast, they knew that they had each other to beat. As far as other accolades, I would say the race that Dad won at Monza. Up until 2003, my dad was the youngest winner of F1 racing until Alonso won, broke that record in 2003. My dad was 22. Back in the day, they would consider, I'm not real sure how it all worked, but they considered the Indy 500 to be part of the F1 deal. And so Dad was 22 at that, so that's when Alonso broke Dad's record. But as far as the Indy race, Dad's still the youngest winner after 70 years. And accolades, he's been inducted in the Motorsports Hall of Fame of America in 2005. He was inducted in 2003 in the Stock Car Hall of Fame. He's been inducted in the Midget Car Hall of Fame. He's been inducted into the Sprint Car Hall of Fame, 1993. And there's a dozen of them, and I can't even recall all of them, but that's just a few.
Basically every Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Any Hall of Fame that he wasn't inducted into?
Not that I know of. I think he's made them all.
So did you ever have any desire to even get in the car? You said you might be getting in the car this coming year to honor him, to drive in the 500. But did you ever have any times that you got to get in the car when, you know, before or after a race when you were just out at a track sometime?
Oh, yeah, I can remember. I got to watch my Uncle Joe, who raced NASCAR and USAC. In fact, just this last month, I was up at the Milwaukee Mile, and that was the last time I was there. It was 1980, and Uncle Joe was racing USAC stock cars against A.J. Foyt. And my Uncle Joe beat A.J. Foyt that weekend. That's the first time I'd been to that track. So I was told, in order to get in my dad's 98 car on the parade lap in 2022, that I have to drive a car of like kind, vintage, with an Offie-powered engine before they'll allow me to do that. So I went to the Miller meet, and a guy by the name of Tom Malloy, son of Emmett Malloy, who my dad used to race for, he let me drive his Roadster, and it has an Offie-powered engine. Well, when I first got there, his mechanic didn't even speak to me. I mean, it was total silence for probably 3 hours. So after 3 hours, I get my racing suit on, and I go to get in the car, and they tell me, here's the clutch, here's the brake, here's all this, here's the kill switch, and they're describing everything to me, and I get in and take off. And the first time I was out, I was only going about 50 because this is new to me. I wasn't going fast. Offies like to go fast. They don't like to go 50. They like to go 70 or 80 or 110. So I wasn't going to do that in a man's car that I'm not familiar with and I don't own and not smart. So I came in after two laps and the mechanic, he goes, why did you come in? I said, Mark, it's shimmying on the front end. He goes, that's because you have to stand on it, Toddy. I said, okay, start her up. I'm going to stand on it. And I went back out there and I stood on it, and this guy that didn't hardly speak to me the first 3 hours I was there, when I pulled in after about 10 laps, he goes, good job, Toddy. I'm very proud of you. And then the next day I drove it again. And all of those different times, when you're driving an Offie, it's hard to take off and stop without killing the engine. I think that's why they're concerned about me doing that with my dad's car in May of next year. So this way, I got familiar with how it operates, how it works, how it takes off, and I feel very confident that next May, they're going to say it's a go for me to get in that car to honor my dad on May 29th, 70 years after he took the checkered flag at Indy.
Did he have any phrases or kind of words that he lived by that really kind of stand out for the racing industry, or that, you know, just anything that just kind of stood out that he'd always say?
There's several, but honestly, right now, I can't think of any. Well,
okay. I guess better phrase, what would be, if he was still here today, what would he tell up-and-coming, inspiring racers? You know, what would be some words of advice that you know that he's kind of said over the years, maybe to others, that he would say to young, inspiring racers today?
First, he'd probably say, stand on it, kid. But he'd also say, probably, you know, be careful, you know, be cool. You know, it's a long race, be there at the end. That's why my dad was there at the end in 52. He knew 200 laps was a long race, and that's what you have to do, is be there at the end. So you can't win it on the first lap. I know he'd tell him that. Same thing, when you do win, remain humble. My dad was a very humble man. Don't be boastful and don't get arrogant. When you win, you know, invest your money, live wisely, don't go out and party and drink and do stupid things like I did because I was young and dumb and didn't know any better. That's what comes to my mind.
Okay, so who would be some people that are still living that you would love to hear them tell some stories about your dad, Troy Ruttman?
A.J. Foyt, Johnny Rutherford. Oh, goodness. Maybe Gordon Johncock. He's kind of out of racing now, but if I went to Michigan, maybe I'd like to talk to him. Bobby Unser just recently passed away, but he told me a lot of neat stories about my dad and a lot of things my dad did for him. One sticks out in my mind. When his brother Jerry Unser, who was older than him by 4 years, my dad and Jerry were good friends, and they both had a stock car ride with Rush Chevrolet. And Bobby told me that he didn't have a ride. So my dad gets wind of this. He goes over to the phone booth. This is probably 1956, 57. And the next thing Bobby knows, he's got a ride with Rush Chevrolet just by my dad making a phone call. So I'm just trying to think of guys that are still living. See, Bobby just passed. Maybe Al. He didn't know Al as much because Al was about 6 years younger. But he's still alive. I don't know how close he was to Andretti, but I might ask him if he has any recollections of Troy, because Andretti really was more out of the 60s. I would say those
are the main guys.
Yeah, those are the guys that stick out in my mind, yes.
Okay, well, I really appreciate you opening up, and, you know, I know it's hard because he's gone and whatnot, but it sounds like he was at the top of the heap pretty much, you know, from the beginning, and especially getting in all the different Hall of Fames. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right, well, we're going to close this one out, and, you know, may Troy Ruttman's memories and the things he did in racing always live on and inspire others.
Thank you.